thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's June 2021, and you're listening to episode 238, which is a conversation about the worldview of philosophical naturalism and those scientists who pursue meaning in what they see as a godless universe and the Christian response to that worldview. Today's guest is Dr. Melissa Kane Travis, who serves as an affiliate faculty at the Lee Strobel Center for Evangelism and Applied Apologetics at Colorado Christian University. Melissa is the author of Science and the Mind of the Maker, What the Conversation Between Faith and Science Reveals About God. Last year in 2020, Melissa wrote a feature article for the Christian Research Journal called Scientific Materialist Manifesto, The Pursuit of Meaning in a Godless Universe. And it's currently an online exclusive article that subscribers can access at our website, equip.org. If you're not currently subscribed and want to read her article, please subscribe to our journal at equip.org. And that is one of the benefits you will receive to get online access to all of our exclusive content. Melissa, it's good to have you on.
Thank you, Melanie. I'm glad to be here.
Well, as I mentioned, this article is the first of a three-part series that Melissa has done for our print edition, and the final part in this series is going to be published coming up in our June 2021, this month issue at the end of the month. So if you would like to read the final piece in this series, please do subscribe to the magazine. But in this series, she is addressing various claims made by recent books that she's referring to as scientific materialist manifestos. So why don't you tell our listeners, what do you mean by scientific materialist manifesto?
Sure. Well, for decades now, we've seen books published by atheist scientists or atheist science popularizers that attempt to promote materialism by arguing that science has explained, or at least nearly explained, all the big mysteries of existence. So the origin of the universe, the origin of life, and the origin of consciousness and rationality. And their essential aim is to use this alleged sufficiency of science to undermine any worldview that posits God or anything like God. So we've seen these kinds of books going back even to the early mid-20th century. But in recent years, I've started noticing this really interesting shift in this genre of books. The scholars that are writing these days seem to have recognized the fact that as human beings, we're not entirely satisfied with explanations just for the material stuff of the universe. And because these are things that don't help us in our day-to-day lives with one another, our lifelong search for meaning, or our pursuit for individual happiness. And intuitively, we just know that there's something more to life than matter in motion, and that whatever that something is more important than physical stuff. So quite a few books that have been published by scientific materialists in the past few years have tended to take a broader scope by appealing to this humane intuition that we all have, this unquenchable desire for objective meaning and for purpose in our lives. And these books actually have counterparts in other forms of media. And a really good example of that would be Neil deGrasse Tyson's reboot of Carl Sagan's famous Cosmos television series. It has this very strong materialist bent, but it also uses lots of language and images that are meant to inspire awe and wonder at the grandeur of the universe, and then also at the marvels of the scientific enterprise, which is continually uncovering more and more information about the universe. So even though this series is a science series per se, it really does a lot to try to appeal to our human need for the transcendentals, but without including anything that's actually transcendent. So that's what I mean when I talk about this genre of a scientific materialist manifesto. It goes beyond trying to give comprehensive scientific answers for physical origins of things, and it also tries to bring in all of these humane interests that we have, this vested interest we have in meaning, value, and purpose in human existence.
You mentioned Neil deGrasse Tyson, and I think for a lot of people, like you said, in other forms of media, not just his reboot television series, but also he is very active on social media. So a lot of people follow him, and his tweets are very pithy. They're also, some of them, very pointedly anti-Christian or anti-religious. So just wondering why you think that these particular scientists, so they've kind of come out of just more of the academic world, but they become like household names, like Neil deGrasse Tyson. Why do you think they're enjoying this popularity in our culture right now?
Well, I think there's within all of us this desire to have our guru or our sage or our teacher who we follow on bigger issues. And what's interesting to me about Neil deGrasse Tyson on social media is that ever so often you'll catch him posting a beautiful picture from like the Hubble telescope or something like that. And he'll say something about how this should inspire all this deep wonder and awe in our hearts at the grandeur of the universe, yet he has nothing in which to objectively ground these ideas. And I think the books, these scientific materialist manifestos, are enjoying great popularity because scientific materialism as a philosophy has become the dominant purview among the intelligentsia of the developed world. So you have this whole portion of the general population, people who may not have a science background or who don't have the high credentials in the natural sciences, that are buying into this philosophical framework of scientific materialism, and they want to promote it in their own sphere of influence. So they're consuming this type of material. And the perception is that this is the kind of book that intelligent, non-superstitious people read. In other words, non-religious people. And so some of these readers are intentionally beefing up their ability to offer an apologetic, if you will, for the philosophy of scientific materialism. And they're human. And whether they admit it or not, they're yearning for answers to the much more fundamental issues of human existence. So they're reaching for what scientific materialism has on offer rather than exploring theistic options. And this new spate of books, these scientific materialist manifestos, are trying to offer that to their readership. And so that's why I think the books, the other media, are enjoying such unprecedented popularity.
In this particular article, the first one in your series, you specifically are addressing the problem of finding, you know, meaning and value and purpose within the philosophical framework of scientific materialism. So what originally attracted you to this issue? And I think that, people who hold to this, even the average person, I don't know if you see those memes, but sometimes if somebody posts anything that's like in the realm of faith or something that's not quantifiable by science, you'll see replies on social media like, this is dumb because science. And then there'll be a meme of Bill Nye, the science guy, saying because science. So people are looking to this particular worldview as like, this is the answer, not religion, not faith, not prayer. And so what attracted you about this particular issue to cover it and kind of unpack and debunk it?
Well, to be candid, even though I've been a Christian since my childhood, this problem never occurred to me until my first semester of graduate school, and that was way back in 2009. And I was taking this elective course in basic Christian apologetics, and one of the lectures we were required to listen to was one by Dr. William Lane Craig, and the title of the lecture was The Absurdity of Life Without God. And I actually referenced that lecture in my article. It had an explosive impact on me, and still to this day, I include it in my top three most influential lectures list, because that's the kind of impact it had on my thinking about broader reality. So in the lecture, Craig gives a summary of the intellectual history behind this idea of meaninglessness in human existence without the existence of God. And I was struck by how some of the most revered atheist intellectuals of the past century were actually painfully honest about the existential ramifications of their view. So ramifications that have been explored in great fiction literature, in stage plays, in poetry, and in the visual arts. And over the decades since I first heard Bill Craig's lecture, I'm still astonished by how many brilliant people have been willing to accept the outworking of a godless universe without falling into abject despair. I mean, how do you face the giant empty cosmos and your own finitude without just despairing of the utter lack of meaning and purpose in that worldview? I don't know. But anyway, that's how I first got interested in the issue. And then when I decided to read some of the recent scientific materialist manifestos, I was very much inspired to make this subtopic the centerpiece of my first article, because I just find it so compelling from the perspective of Christian apologetics. I think this really gets down to the root of human concern, the root of human existence, the things that matter most.
I would think, or just interactions that I see with people who would reject religion on this in terms of having despair. Well, first of all, if someone, you know, struggles as some people do with mental health issues, that, I mean, it's very despairing. It seems to me that there's nothing objective that they can look to for any kind of, I guess, hope. But on the flip side, I think a lot of those people would start investing just more of in a humanist worldview. So let's just make this world the best that we can make it. Let's try to have, you know, everybody's a good person, or most people are good people. So let's just try to make this world a better person in whichever way that they can. And it's very interesting, because that still is lacking. So I'm just wondering, what are the difficulties for this worldview? What kind of things does it face in terms of these issues of, you know, meaning and value and purpose within life?
The problem is that according to scientific materialism, all that exists is the material stuff of the universe. There is nothing whatsoever that transcends the physical, and that would include God, angels, demons, or even immaterial human souls. Now, the scientific materialist affirms that the human race is finite. So individually, we are mortal. We're here for a short time on the cosmic scale, and then we're gone forevermore. But eventually, all life will go extinct as our sun dies, and then the universe itself becomes entirely sterile. So if scientific materialism is true, there's nothing objective. There's no standard outside of the human mind in which to ground these concepts of meaning, purpose, and value. And since we don't have immortal souls, according to that view, we're all going to pass out of existence anyway. And that's a major problem for a human being who's trying to make sense out of our lived reality, our deep inner sense that meaning, value, and purpose are actually real and not just make-believe. The only way meaning, value, and purpose can be real is for two things to be true. We have to have a transcendent God who exists and in whom we can ground these things. In other words, he imparts reality to these concepts. And in addition to that, we have to have an immortal soul. In other words, we need both objective grounding and we need perpetual existence for there to be any meaning, value, or purpose in human life. And scientific materialism, by definition, cannot offer such things.
You're listening to episode 238 from the Postmodern Realities podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Dr. Melissa Kane Travis, who wrote a feature article for the Christian Research Journal called Scientific Materialist Manifesto, The Pursuit of Meaning in a Godless Universe. You can read her article as one of our online exclusives when you go to our website, equip.org, if you are a Christian Research Journal subscriber, and to subscribe for $33.50, also go to equip.org. The other way you can help us out and help continue bringing you this podcast is to really simply just tell friends about it. The more people that know about this podcast, the more people will find our content. And we are coming up on almost 250 episodes over the past 5 years. And so we'd love it if you have been a longtime listener, or if you're a new listener, if you could tell people why you're listening to this podcast. Go to Apple Podcasts, and if you find Postmodern Realities, please do leave us a review, either a short written review or a starred review. In addition, we would be grateful for any tips you could give us for our content, even if you do not have the budget right now for a full subscription. You can tip us like $3 or $5 at our website, equip.org. Just go to magazine, click down to Postmodern Realities podcast. You will see every single episode we've released at any one of those landing pages, including this one. You will find the link to give us a tip. And thank you for your support. So we're continuing to explore the worldview of scientific materialism with Melissa. And these particular scientific materialists, that, you know, they seem comfortable and maybe even pleased with the idea of, you know, finding subjective meaning in our individual lives, despite the fact that we're, you know, ultimately headed towards non-existence that they believe in. So how should the Christian apologists respond to this?
Well, first of all, I am not convinced that this comfort that they project, this cheerfulness about the situation, goes very deep at all. I think if you had a one-on-one candid conversation with someone who thinks that they've bought into this paradigm, it won't take you very long to pinpoint at least one area of life that they're extremely passionate about, that they speak out about or fight for because of how important they believe it to be. Civil rights issues are a perfect example of this. And so I find it effective to get the person talking about why they care so deeply about these things, or the one thing that they've made central to their thinking and actions within our human society. And then ask them why they care so much. If there isn't truly any objective value or meaning in our brief lives on this little speck of rock, then why are they investing so much time and energy and emotion into something that's merely a blip on the cosmic radar? As Christians, doing the work of apologetics, I think engaging in a conversation of this type and pressing them to explain why any of what they love so much or care about so much matters at all. And I think that will at the least get them thinking more about their thoughts and actions in contrast with the worldview they claim to hold.
So in your article, you discuss this scientist, Sean Carroll, his particular philosophy of what he's calling poetic naturalism. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about it. And if our readers and our actual listeners aren't familiar with Sean Carroll, he is a professor at Caltech in the Los Angeles area, and he studies physics and astrophysics and philosophy, and seems to me to be one of those scientists who has this like layperson approach. So he has a podcast that he releases weekly called Mindscape, and he talks not just about science, but he talks about philosophy and culture and the arts and things like that. And so he's also been featured on NPR. So he takes these various different topics and he makes it really understandable. I mean, he's obviously very smart. He's a physicist and he works at Caltech, but he takes these kind of topics that you're talking about. Like, what, why does time exist? What about time? Why is it mysterious? How do we answer, you know, make heads or tails of it? And he answers it in a very lay-friendly way, if you've ever listened to him on NPR. So what is his particular philosophy of poetic naturalism and how does it work?
So Carroll's scientific materialist manifesto, as I call it, is entitled The Big Picture on the Origins of Life, Meaning, and the Universe Itself. So you can get just from the title that he's going to go beyond the science and speak to some of these more humane issues. And he uses this phrase, poetic naturalism, to describe his philosophy of the whole of our human experience. And this is his attempt to offer a more comprehensive understanding of the world than science alone can provide. So he argues that along with the material reality that science describes, we can also incorporate our inner human experience. And this is how he phrases it. A poetic naturalist says that we can have two very different sounding ways of describing the world, a physics level story and a human level story, which invoke separate sets of concepts and yet end up being compatible in their predictions concerning what happens in the world. He says, poetic naturalism asks us to take the dramatic step of viewing meaning in the same way we view other concepts that human beings invent to talk about the universe. It's up to you, me, and every other person to create meaning and purpose for ourselves. So I'll pause there and just point out he's admitting that these things are ways that we look at the world from a human perspective, but ultimately they are invented as ways to just describe our experience. And then he goes on, and I love this passage. He says, maybe we're fooling ourselves if we think we can find fulfillment once we accept that we're part of the physical world, patterns of elementary particles beholden to the laws of physics. Sure, you can say you're leading a rich and rewarding life based on your love for your family and friends, your dedication to your craft, and your work to make the world a better place. But are you really? If the value we place in such things isn't objectively determined, and if you won't be around to witness any of it in 100 years or so, how can you say your life truly matters? Okay, I'll stop there for a moment and say, when I read that passage, I was stunned. I was like, wow, he is really nailing the very point that I want to make. He's pointing out the two things that I mentioned earlier in this podcast, that we have to have an objective standard for these things and that we have to have perpetual existence. So he's admitting these things. And so then he goes on to respond to this idea and he says, oh, that's just grumpiness talking. And he ultimately believes we should just go right on cultivating positive attitudes and happy beliefs about meaning and purpose at the subjective human level, in spite of the stark reality of the situation that we really find ourselves in. So we should simply pretend rather than face up to the logical outworking of scientific materialism. And that seems so intellectually dishonest. I mean, how is this exercise in self-delusion substantively different from what he thinks of as the self-delusion of religion. This is a classic double standard at best and outright hypocrisy at worst, I think. And as a side note, one thing that's very interesting to me is that this doesn't jive at all with the philosophy of scientism, which says that anything that's part of actual reality is something that can be investigated using the methods of science. And many of these authors, like Sean Carroll, espouse scientism in their attempts to discredit religion. But then on the other hand, they're doing this exercise in self-delusion of pretending that these feelings we have about meaning, value, and purpose are just important enough for us to keep pretending.
You know, that's interesting because I mentioned, you know, people who hold to this worldview, I think the best that they can do in how they approach it, as I interact with people who would have this kind of worldview and, like I said, be humanistic about it. And he's saying, really, you're fooling yourself if you're trying to think I'm making the world a better place, because you don't really know if that's going to happen or not. It's so interesting because since this worldview, like you said, it doesn't include any objective grounding for this, you know, human value, meaning, and purpose. How does Sean Carroll and people who, other scientists who think like him, you know, handle the fact that as humans, we ask ourselves those questions. We naturally crave transcendence of some kind. We want to know, why are we here? Why do we exist? Is there any meaning to life? I mean, how do they deal with that? It can come to a point of despair for some people.
I alluded a little bit to this earlier when I mentioned Neil deGrasse Tyson's interesting social media posts about the grandeur of the universe. And that's a good example of a technique that I've seen quite frequently. And it's this attempt to emphasize how spectacular and mind-blowing our universe is, to sort of inspire a deep sense of awe and wonder at the universe. It's this attempt to make the cosmos itself sort of a surrogate for transcendence. And they pair this with the stunning achievements that mankind has made in the natural sciences. And that's supposed to give us this feeling of transcendence without actually invoking any kind of transcendence. And another way we see this is through all of the language about making grand leaps in scientific progress for the sake of future humanity. For listeners who have perhaps read Clay Jones' book, I believe it's called Immortal. Is that the name of the book? Yeah. He talks about the quote unquote immortality projects. I think these scientific materialists very much view the scientific enterprise as the grand immortality project for themselves and for humankind more broadly. So again, it's this surrogate for transcendence. Now, one of the books I talk about in the article is Brian Greene's book entitled Until the End of Time. And he illustrates this very technique that I'm referring to. He writes, "We are ephemeral, we are evanescent, yet our moment is rare and extraordinary, a recognition that allows us to make life's impermanence and the scarcity of self-reflective awareness the basis for value and a foundation for gratitude. While we long for a perdurable legacy, the clarity we gain from exploring the cosmic timeline reveals that this is out of reach. But that very same clarity underscores how utterly wondrous it is that a small collection of the universe's particles can rise up, examine themselves and the reality they inhabit, determine just how transitory they are, and with a flitting burst of activity, create beauty, establish connection, and illuminate mystery. Green is just so poetic. He's a fabulous writer, and I read everything that he publishes because he just has this flair for prose. But ultimately, if we dig down to what it is he's actually claiming here, we have to recognize that no matter how vast and beautiful and ancient the universe is or becomes, or how powerful human sciences are, they can't ever escape the bounds of finite space-time. They never become transcendent, and they can't function to supply our human need for the transcendent things. We yearn for something so much more than the material, something, or maybe I should say someone, in which to find genuine, authentic, objective meaning, value, and purpose. And we all yearn for there to be something beyond this one brief, fragile life. God has put eternity into our hearts, as Ecclesiastes 3:11 says.
You know, it's interesting that you're pointing out there are different inconsistencies with their worldview, you know, if pressed to, like, let's take it to its logical conclusions. And it was interesting, maybe 6 years ago, 7 years ago, my oldest son was applying for college and just emailed various different professors in his area that he wanted to study, which was in engineering. And at one of the major universities here, I had happened to hear one of the professors, I happened to read actually his article in the New York Times. It was just kind of a memoir type of thing. And so I connected to him, and I don't know how we started down. I looked at his CV, and he was also interested in a lot of science things. And so he had done some blogs or something in this kind of area that you're talking about. You know, he just kind of held to that scientific manifesto. And so I asked him, I said, well, what about things like, you know, consciousness for animals or humans, or even bat consciousness, for example? How can that be proven by science? And he just basically said, well, some things are mysteries and we just won't ever know. And yes, I realize there are certain things that maybe science isn't answering. But it's interesting to me that if they found inconsistencies in religion, or if religious people like Christians talked about mysteries and the mystery of God and certain aspects of it, it would be so poo-pooed. And yet they do that themselves. And so I'm wondering, you know, you're arguing, you mentioned Green and Carroll, and, you know, why aren't they really living out their worldview with consistency? Because you're saying they're not really thinking about it. I mean, he does have moments of, okay, yes, this is what it really means. But what do you really mean by not living out their worldview and consistency? Because as I talk to people who are PhDs and scientists and engineers, as they're holding to this, they're not living it out either.
Right. Even the most strident atheist, for example, lives as if there are really such things as right and wrong, and as if human beings truly have an objective, intrinsic value. So they demonstrate this in the way that they talk, and they fight for their favorite social causes. They have their own moral hot button issues. They will endorse praise, blame, and legal ramification for lawbreakers. Their entire lives are what I refer to as this big tragic absurdity, because it looks like one big game of pretend, because scientific materialism cannot underpin these things that are so central to how they're living their lives. And what we can conclude is that scientific materialism as a philosophy, as a worldview, is impossible to live out. And it doesn't take a whole heck of a lot of reflection to realize that this is true. Deep down, we all know it. And that's why authors like Brian Greene and Sean Carroll are so encouraging about, well, let's discover our own meaning and let's live as if this ultimately matters, because then that's great for the human race and we can be happy and have all the warm fuzzies. So that's what I mean about not living it out with consistency. They're arguing for this one view of ultimate reality, but then they can't live as if it's true because you end up in all sorts of problems.
So as we've kind of talked about this and you've really unpacked the deficiencies of the scientific materialist manifesto, what's the value of it for Christian readers and apologists to think about it and be able to answer it?
Well, as I said before, I greatly enjoy reading Brian Greene. He's probably my favorite author of this genre that I'm calling Scientific Materialist Manifesto. I enjoy these kinds of books, especially when the author, like Greene, is very honest about the philosophical ramifications of the view. I actually think Greene is a little more honest than Carroll if you compare the books in parallel. But just like Carroll, he still falls back on this idea that we should just joyfully embrace the subjective meaning, value, and purpose that we just invent for ourselves and that we agree with our fellow humans on to whatever extent. And so I think reading books like these is quite beneficial to every Christian, particularly someone working in Christian apologetics, in terms of revealing the deficiencies of scientific materialism that we've discussed and the weaknesses, the terrible weaknesses of the solutions that they try to offer to the deepest longings of the human heart. I think this is excellent material for conversations with non-believers.
I think that's a good suggestion. I find it really interesting that a lot of people who are skeptics don't necessarily read books that answers their questions, but I do find that Christian apologists like yourself do read the original source material of those people who are critiquing Christianity. I think it's very helpful for us to interact with some of those works for the mature Christian. And so with that in mind, if some of our listeners want to do some further reading on this issue, what are some of the resources that you would suggest they read?
First of all, I'd highly recommend the William Lane Craig talk that I mentioned earlier. I don't think there's a good recording available for free, but if you go to the Reasonable Faith website, you can pull up the transcript for that lecture, which is presented in essay form. I happen to have a recording that I purchased for graduate school, and I think that the essay by the same title is word for word the original lecture. And again, the title of it is The Absurdity of Life Without God. Now, if you go on the Reasonable Faith YouTube channel, they've put together a great little animated video that is a wonderful companion to that talk or essay. And the title of the video is There Meaning to Life? And it covers some of the same big points that Craig makes in the lecture and the essay. And then in addition to that, there's a great volume of essays that I've actually used to teach a philosophy course at Houston Baptist. And the title of the book is 2 Dozen or So Arguments for the Existence of God. And one of the chapters in the book, one of the essays, is by Dr. Jerry Walls. And the title of it is The Argument from the Meaning of Life. And that's a very good short essay to read related to this issue of finding a way to objectively ground meaning, value, and purpose.
Well, finally, I want to end with some fun rapid fire questions for Melissa. So, Melissa, what's your favorite meal?
Oh, my favorite meal. That's hard. Lasagna?
And knowing what you know now, what is some advice? It can be practical advice. It doesn't have to be super profound, that you would give your younger 18-year-old self.
My younger 18-year-old self, oh my goodness, be very well aware of how much you do not know would be probably the first thing I would say.
And if you did not need to sleep, what would you do with the extra time?
Oh, read for sure. There are not enough years in the human lifespan to read every book on my list.
Well, thank you, Melissa, for being a guest today on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thank you for having me. This was so much fun.
You've been listening to episode 238 of the Postmodern Realities podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest has been Dr. Melissa Kane Travis, who wrote a feature article for our journal called Scientific Materialist Manifesto, The Pursuit of Meaning in a Godless Universe. You can read her article, which is an online exclusive, at our website, equip.org, where it is accessible to our subscribers. To subscribe, also go to equip.org.